From Lock Haven to Philadelphia, Saxonburg to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Wolf administration botched shutting down the state's economy. Now they are inflicting more damage with a drawn-out and confusing reopening. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Matt Briette are here with a Capital Watch roundtable discussion on the Wolf shutdown follies. And Governor Tom Wolf has weaponized the deep state bureaucracy to enforce his unconstitutional and illegal shutdown orders. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor and our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. FreedomWorks and the Committee to Unleash Prosperity has conducted a review of the reopening policies in the 50 states, and they have assigned each governor a letter grade based upon the potential economic damage their policies are likely to inflict. Four governors and Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser received an F for their handling of the reopening process, including Pennsylvania's Governor Tom Wolf. Wolf was joined by the governors of New Jersey, West Virginia, and Wisconsin in being assigned the worst letter grades. Even Governor Andrew Cuomo from hard-hit New York State received a C for his handling of the reopening following business closure and stay-at-home orders to stem the spread of COVID-19. States which received an A include Georgia and Florida, which have led the way in reopening their economies, thus inflicting the least amount of collateral damage on their states. And don't forget, Tuesday is primary election day in Pennsylvania. The April primary was postponed until June 2nd due to the coronavirus pandemic. Counties are reporting a record number of mail-in ballots. Counting those ballots likely will lead to delayed results in some counties, meaning close races will not be decided for days. Most counties are also rolling out new voting machines. Several counties, which put new machines into service last November, experienced significant difficulties which marred the results. Glitches in the system need to be worked out in the primary, as the November general election is expected to generate high voter turnout. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The shutdown of Pennsylvania's economy to bend the curve of the coronavirus pandemic was chaotic at best, draconian at worst. Now the Wolf administration is hindering the economic recovery with a too slow reopening based on metrics that are constantly changing and lacking in clarity. Our Capital Watch crew is back, and they're here to discuss the situation. Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business join host David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Overjoyed to be here in the studio with my great friends, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, so good to see you.
So great to be back, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you guys.
So as I was leaving today to come do this show, my wife asks, so what's today's radio program going to be about? And I said, the Wolf Shutdown Follies. And she said, no, you're not really going to call it that. I said, oh, I certainly am. And of course, now I just did. So, yes, it is a bloody howling outrage. The criminal negligence and ongoing systematic blundering mismanagement of this entire situation, it just beggars belief.
It absolutely does, David. And one that, honestly, as we were talking in the green room or whatever you call it, before we came on, I just don't understand how someone can be so obtuse, so ignorant of economics. We've seen this play out, that the goalposts continue to move from flatten the curve, don't overwhelm our healthcare system, to I'm not sure what it is now, David. I mean, the economic destruction of people's livelihoods, the impacts on other mental health crises out there. All of these things, I cannot explain this when people ask me, why is he doing this? Why are we engaged in a complete shutdown of healthy people?
Well, and Rebecca, of course, the impact on small business, even mm-hmm. a really healthy small business would not have had more than maybe 2 months of cash reserves. Most would have, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And this is just apocalyptic.
It is. It's been absolutely devastating for small businesses. And I wish, some of our listeners could hear some of the calls that I've been on with our membership in the past couple of weeks. I mean, just devastating stories of, life savings put into a business. And, they finally get to do something they love and maybe hired a few people. And they're just not going to make it, and they don't know what to do. And it is absolutely devastating. And to the point of how decisions are being made about, how have we got to this point, I think the governor's unwillingness to listen to the business community,
mm-hmm. yes.
listen to other important stakeholders like healthcare professionals and, business professionals about what would be the best way to move forward.
Every turn, the governor has not only failed, and Rebecca, your point is spot on. Not only has he failed to listen, but more than that, they failed to even ask beforehand to ascertain the facts of the situation, to say what would happen in the real world if we did this. They never asked us. Did they ever ask you?
No. We found out about the closure, the night the governor announced it, just like everybody else, and having to deal with that and help our members deal with the impact of that was just awful, just devastating.
Well, this is where all of us have members that, are in the business world, right? That's their livelihoods. They understand their supply chains. They understand how they can do this. And the fact that Governor Wolf did not consult any of the associations representing tens of thousands of employers and hundreds of thousands of employees and figure these things out. I mean, Pennsylvania had to go to this waiver system because they bungled it so much, and then they bungled that.
Yes.
But you know what? This is par for the course for this governor. He didn't call the businesses to the table. He didn't talk to the long-term care facilities providers. I mean, and we knew this crisis, this pandemic, was going to strike our nursing homes, personal care homes. We saw this happening in the state of Washington.
Yes, and our seniors would be the most vulnerable members of our population.
That's right. And so all of those providers, public, private, nonprofit providers for the elderly were not brought to the table either. And so it's really not a surprise that we are seeing unemployment numbers today, over 2.3 million people unemployed. We're seeing over two-thirds of the deaths happening in our long-term care facilities. I mean, this is, like you said, Dave, it should be criminal. I mean, someone should be held accountable for the destruction of private property, the destruction of people's lives. I mean, literally their lives,
yes.
because
yes.
of the failure of this administration to make promises, not deliver on them, to move the goalposts, all of this. I mean, I'm sure people hear it in our voices. We're angry because of the people who have been harmed by this
yes.
unnecessarily.
And that the Pennsylvania Department of Health had an action plan in March for emergency intervention in the long-term care facilities, in the nursing homes, to get the extra support, testing, all those things. And then they didn't deploy it.
And they still haven't called them to the table, David. That's what's worse. If they still have not been brought in to the discussion, the strategy room of how we can take care of this problem now and how we can deal with this when it comes back. Because
Correct.
We know you don't defeat a virus. I mean, that just drives me crazy, this whole idea that we're going to eliminate the virus as though it's the German armies, that we're going to eradicate them. It's coming back. And this governor has done nothing to mitigate it now, nor prepare for this future.
Well, and it just goes to show how utterly ideological he is in his worldview, where, that there are steps that he could take, should take, needs to take to responsibly reopen our economy, because we need every single business that can be open safely. We need them to be open so that they get some kind of revenue stream so that they can – from satisfying customers. Uncle Sam can only print money for so long. We need actual earnings from actual work done, products sold. But we need a lifeline for these small businesses so that as many of them can survive this as possible, because – if we don't, and we maximize the damage to the economy, we're gonna incinerate the tax base, and that means that we're gonna be in even worse shape, because there won't be enough people pulling the wagon to care for those that need to be in the wagon.
Well, and it's not just the state tax base; it's the local tax base too. School districts are going to be in trouble should these, you know, should businesses go out of business. You're going to have local governments in trouble too. It's not just at the state level, and that's a huge worry. And we all know that small businesses are the pillar of local communities. I mean, they're the folks who, you know, have the floats and the parades and the uniforms for the baseball teams. I mean, without them, communities are going to be hollow. And we don't want to see that going forward. But, I mean, you had mentioned about how businesses, the cash on hand, small businesses don't usually have a lot of cash on hand. We had done some surveying at the beginning of this process and found out that about half of small businesses only have around 2 months worth of cash reserves, or less than 2 months worth of cash reserves even. And beyond that, another quarter of them only had about 4 to 6 months of cash reserves. So we are already at that point where a lot of them have passed the point of no return.
And by keeping in place these draconian shutdowns, which we recognize are not necessary to maintain public health and public safety, by keeping them in place, by continuing the lockdown, we're pushing more and more of those kinds of businesses past the point of no return.
Well, this is the problem, David, is that the governor laid out the standard. You remember when this the first shutdown was, is that we are going to only allow for businesses that are essential, life-sustaining businesses.
So
right?
He said.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So he said. Of course, we know that was fraught with errors, because he closed down supply chains that are providing those life-sustaining. And so this whole essential versus non-essential became an arbitrary and very capricious manner in which it was deployed. But here's the problem with that, is that, you know, grocery stores, of course, are essential, right? We all need food. But they're not necessarily safe.
Correct.
Right? I mean, you would walk into them and you had a lot of people, you know, safe as in terms of how the health department secretary has defined things. But then we have businesses that were deemed non-essential that could very easily operate safely.
Yes.
And this was the problem, is that the standard should have been, can you operate safely versus unsafely? Rather than essential versus non-essential. And if we'd have had the approach of saying, if you can operate safely, oh, do so. Keep things going. Keep people employed. Let's not throw a bunch of people into the unemployment line unnecessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, people see this, right? You go down to the Lowe's and you're buying, you know, your nursery goods, you're buying hardware. They're open, massive amounts of people. But then your local mom and pop hardware store or nursery was closed down and shuttered.
Yeah.
And it's the local mom and pop that are suffering while the big box stores are cramming tons of people into them. That would be unsafe in my book. And we ought to be looking at anybody that can operate safely should be wide open and should never have been shuttered.
And one of the things that really bothers me and gives urgency to this present moment, because the lockdown in Pennsylvania has been broader and has been kept in place longer than in competitor states, Pennsylvania's relative competitive position is eroding rapidly. I mean, I have peer relationships with the state association leaders across the country, and so I'm on a weekly call with them. And to hear, for example, that manufacturing in Georgia never closed. I mean, on March 19, when the governor had a shutdown order, We had a statement out within hours pointing out the very flawed nature, capricious nature of the going by industrial code, which, again, is completely ignorant of supply chains and key vendors. The next day, March 20, Governor Wolf got a letter from Jay Timmons, the president of the National Association of Manufacturers, urging Governor Wolf to declare all manufacturing essential. That was also completely ignored. And so if there's a Pennsylvania company right now that is shut down, is not allowed to lawfully operate, and it is part of a serving a contract to a national company, if it's part of a multi-state operation, and that Pennsylvania company can't fulfill the contract, can't execute its function, the business is not going to wait on Tom Wolf to decide whether or not we feel safe. That business function is going to move. It's going to move immediately, and that contract will be fulfilled by a new vendor in a state that is open, whether it's Georgia or Texas or North Carolina or someplace else. And in that way, the business will leave Pennsylvania permanently. This is happening as you're listening to the sound of my voice.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania and Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners.
And again, this crisis, and I'm talking about the lockdown crisis, the shutdown crisis.
The
man-made crisis. That this needs to be arrested immediately because the long-term damage from this could be as bad or worse than the 1991 tax increase, which condemned Pennsylvania to a generation or more of chronic economic underperformance.
Well, and I think we're talking about the other states and our losing competitiveness with those other states. I'm assuming that those other states that we're talking about, because I think it was 48 states that actually use the national standards. There are national CDC standards for operating safely and which businesses are considered essential.
Yes, and it was the CDC protocols and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, CISA.
CISA guidelines. So a bill passed in the General Assembly early on in the crisis here to require Pennsylvania to use those CISA and CDC standards and guidelines for essential businesses. And I believe the governor vetoed that bill.
Yes, he did.
So that would have held us to the same standards as the other states you're talking about.
And this is the arrogance, the supreme arrogance of Governor Wolf and his front office, that there's a knowledge problem. No one could know everything that goes into everyone's manufacturing process. It's just not humanly possible. These are systems that the market has wrought.
Market-based.
And for the Wolf administration and the Wonder Kids in the front office to go eeny, meeny, miny, moe down the industrial code list, I really think one of the things they shut down is paints and coatings. I really think that they thought it was house paints. I don't think that they understand that coatings and glazes and whatnot are critical inputs for the manufacture of machinery. That for example,
and medical equipment.
Well, and I was just going to say that there are antibacterial, antimicrobial coatings that go on medical instruments and hospital beds and things like that. I mean, the cascade effect of disruptions to the supply chain has been ongoing since March 19.
You add into this, David, and Rebecca was touching on it with local revenues. We have seen a $4 or $5 billion hole blown in the state budget. How we're going to find the revenues to continue paying for government, I don't know. When you look at where the job losses have been, less than 3% have been in the government. So the people that are imposing this lockdown are all getting paid and continuing to advocate for a continued lockdown while we're looking at the destruction in the productive sector and the ability to just all of a sudden, we just open up. I think that that's ludicrous, and particularly when you look at some of the standards that they're imposing, it's not going to be economically advisable for some of these industries to reopen at 25% capacity or 50% capacity. There are expenses to running your business, whether it's a restaurant, and at some point, it doesn't make any sense to even try to open. And the governor, of course, throughout all of this, has been just very, very unclear as to what the next step looks like.
We could have given these businesses the ability to figure out how to operate safely. They will come up with solutions, but you got to give them the freedom and the flexibility to do so. And unfortunately, we haven't, in the state, we haven't given them the freedom or flexibility to figure out how to open safely. And we're even talking about imposing additional mandates, like minimum wage increases at this point.
We need to get out from under the disaster declaration and the constitutional amendment that is underway to say that that no disaster declaration may last longer than 30 days without being renewed by the General Assembly is a good one. Unfortunately, constitutional amendments, take multiple years to accomplish.
But I think we do have a real constitutional crisis in the sense that this governor is basically declaring, I have unilateral power to do anything I want.
For as long as I want.
All he says he intends to issue another disaster declaration after this one expires June 4. So he intends to continue to utilize that extraordinary power. In order to curtail it, we'd have to get some Democratic support, unfortunately, that hasn't been there on a lot of these things to call this governor's exercise of authoritarian power into question.
And I think we're looking at a dissertation topic for many, many political science students for the near future, for a long time, because I think we do have a constitutional crisis. The balance has tilted too far in favor of the executive, and who is not, involving the legislative branch at all at this point. I think we do have to really take a hard look at how our emergency declaration statute is written, and the idea that the General Assembly needs to have some involvement at some point in the process. And especially now that we know, because our legislature has been meeting remotely over the past few weeks and they've been passing bills, we know that they can be involved in an emergency declaration. So that has to change. We have to think about how best to bring the executive back, or rein the executive in and bring the legislative branch back into the decision-making process.
Well, amen to that. And obviously, we are going to be on the scene working these issues from now until we were able to make things right. And that, if nothing else, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time to talk with all of you folks again. And as ever, we're grateful for all of you for spending your time with us. As we wind down this program, let's go around the horn. Matt, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Outstanding. Rebecca.
We're at nfib.com/Pennsylvania or on Facebook or Twitter.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and also on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So for Matt, Rebecca, and me, thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. On a crystal clear May morning, across the Susquehanna River from a gleaming state capitol building, a podium adorned with the seal of the Senate of Pennsylvania stood in front of a barber shop. State Senator Mike Regan kicked off a stout defense of the barber's right to cut hair. He was followed by State Senator Doug Mastriano and a parade of legislators speaking on behalf of the barber as the gathered crowd shouted its support. The rally ended with an emotional plea to earn a living by the barber himself, Brad Shepler, a military veteran. What prompted such an outpouring of support? Governor Tom Wolf, who continues to rule Pennsylvania by unchecked executive fiat during the coronavirus pandemic, had decreed haircutting cannot resume until he deems it safe. Shepler defied the governor, who then unleashed deep state stormtroopers on him, threatening to revoke his license and fine him $10,000 per day. There will be months, if not years, of legal wrangling over the governor's authority to ban business activity. But small business owners like Brad Shepler don't have months or years for the courts to hopefully place some checks on presumed executive authority. Closed for 2 weeks to flatten the curve and not overwhelm the healthcare system has turned into months of business closure orders by the governor and a state health department that can't even provide consistent or accurate statistics on the pandemic. Businesses are going bankrupt and consumers have become fed up with the restrictions. But Governor Tom Wolf doesn't care. Worse, having lost the consent of the governed, he has resorted to heavy-handed threats and has weaponized the deep state regulatory bureaucracy against the very taxpayers who pay their salaries. He has threatened everyone from barbers to county commissioners in his zeal to keep Pennsylvania locked down as tight as possible for as long as possible. More and more businesses are willing to take the risk of reopening. Whether they are forced out of business by bankruptcy or by the heavy hand of government fines and license revocations, they're still out of business, so why not at least try? That is the path followed by the round-the-clock diner in York County, which reopened for sit-down dining. The Department of Agriculture, which licensed restaurants, threatened fines and license revocation. Threats have also been made by the Liquor Control Board to revoke licenses of any business that fails to comply with the governor's whims. Wolf went so far as to personally threaten county commissioners who rebelled against his failure to ease restrictions in their counties. He threatened to withhold millions in federal funding passing through the state from any county that defied him. Most of the counties caved, but a couple, including Lebanon County, moved forward despite the governor's threats. The governor's heavy-handed tactics are not sitting well at the county and local levels. Numerous district attorneys have said they will not prosecute anyone cited for violating the business closure or stay-at-home orders. Many county sheriffs, citing their oath to uphold the Constitution, not the governor, have said they will not issue citations. And while thousands of protesters gathered on the Capitol steps to demand an end to his lockdown policies, lawmakers passed a series of bills designed to open up various segments of the state's economy. Wolf responded in his typical imperial style, disregarded the will of the people, and vetoed the bills. Making matters worse, the metrics upon which the state moves from its juvenile red to yellow to green status are ill-defined and ever-changing. Wolf and his embattled health secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine, have shielded themselves from public scrutiny by holding virtual press conferences in which questions are screened by the governor's staff, a process most of the state's news media has meekly accepted. Given the current pace of reopening, it is clear Governor Wolf intends to keep Pennsylvania in some amount of lockdown for many months to come. More businesses will go bankrupt, and drug overdoses, suicides, and domestic abuse cases already on the rise will skyrocket. It is unfortunate our system of checks and balances have, in this instance, failed to curb executive power. The courts have abandoned their role by rejecting cases brought before them. Legislative efforts have met with vetoes. Despite those vetoes, it is critical that lawmakers continue to do everything in their power to reopen Pennsylvania's economy. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKVE-FM in Mount Pleasant, WMSS-FM in Middletown, along with WKFB-AM in Gannett, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville. All of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.